Today is Tuesday, December 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. Coming up, for the first time in more than 200 years, the famed Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris is quiet on Christmas Eve.
Suddenly, Paris is realizing that Notre Dame is out of action, and she'll be out of action for a long time.
Also ahead, the U.S. and China struggle to narrow their differences on a range of issues. And in South Sudan, officials warn immediate help is needed to fend off mass hunger. It's all on today's International Edition. Our top story today, the Afghan Defense Ministry says Taliban insurgents have attacked an army base in the northern Balkh province, killing at least 7 Afghan soldiers. 6 others were wounded. Officials say the attack targeted a base in the Daulat Abad district. The base was jointly manned by the Afghan army and personnel from the National Intelligence Agency. In a separate attack, insurgents ambushed a police convoy in Kapisa province, killing 2 people. That attack came a day after the Taliban claimed responsibility for a blast that killed an American soldier. The insurgents detonated a roadside bomb near a joint U.S. and Afghan military convoy in Kunduz province, bringing the number of American service members killed in Afghanistan this year to at least 19. Meanwhile, the U.S. has been in direct peace talks with the Taliban to negotiate a settlement to the 18-year-old Afghan war. But the Taliban wants the U.S. to sign a deal that would withdraw all foreign troops from Afghanistan before it commits to a nationwide ceasefire or takes part in peace talks to end decades of hostilities in the country. Also, preliminary results from September's election show Afghan President Ashraf Ghani appears to have narrowly won a second term. If the election outcome stands, it could give Ghani the authority he needs to demand a leading role in peace talks with the Taliban. The results follow weeks of delay, controversy, and a troubled vote count that has sparked nationwide tension. VOA's Afghan service this week spoke to former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, James Cunningham, who played a key role in mediating an end to tensions during Afghanistan's 2014 election. Cunningham says trust and transparency will be key this time around.
Well, elections are difficult in any country. We Americans have our own problems and always had. And it's no secret that having elections in Afghanistan is a complicated process, and it's a new process, even though there have been elections now for a number of years. I think the important thing is to rely on the process, rely on the institutions that are responsible for counting the votes, assessing the votes, now assessing the complaints. That should be done carefully, professionally, on a transparent basis, and see where the process ends up. The President Ghani's margin of victory is relatively small, that's clear. But the only way to resolve the issue peacefully, which is very important now for Afghanistan's future, is to allow the process to take its course and to see where it ends up.
Well, given the political and security setbacks of 2019, Cunningham says Afghanistan needs a legitimate and recognized government in 2020 if it hopes to resolve differences at the negotiating table.
I don't know if it can reach a conclusion. We will certainly try to move down that path. I think everybody expects that an actual negotiation that's serious will take some time. I can't predict what will happen as far as the election either, but I hope that what will happen and the best path forward for Afghanistan and its international partners will be to bring the election to a successful conclusion with a recognized winner, with the formation of a legitimate government that will be engaged in a partnership with the United States and our partners in trying to bring the conflict to a close.
And that was former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, James Cunningham, speaking to VOA's Afghan News Service. Moving to Africa, the sudden death of Algeria's longtime military chief, Lieutenant General Ahmed Gaid Salah, is the latest shock this year to an entrenched political system that is trying to hold on to power while providing enough change to satisfy a persistent protest movement. The protests helped to bring down longtime President Abdelaziz Bouteflika in April. Gaid Salah, who died yesterday from a heart attack, essentially guided the country toward an election that brought a member of the established leadership to power while allowing the protests to continue. Now there is new uncertainty about the path the country will take. VOA's Paul Alexander talked with William Lawrence, he's a professor of political science at George Washington University, about the possibilities.
Well, it will probably calm the game for some period. There's 3 days of national mourning and a week of army mourning following the death of the Algeria's strongman. And so, both sides will keep their powder dry and respect a certain period of respect for the dead. It's one of the reasons why Algeria took so long to turn the page after Bouteflika's debilitating heart attack, out of respect for, the statesman of another time. But I don't expect it to impact the overall trends, both on the regime side or the protest side. Because we've just had an election where one of Gaid Salah's closest political allies, Tebboune, was elected president in a highly boycotted election.
So what about the new guy? He is clearly going to be seen as part of the old guard, and that's what the protesters have been trying to get rid of.
Yeah. Now, we have a new army chief being named who's from the east and is not really connected to let's say the corrupt ways of the army. So it'll be interesting to see whether the new army chief has a little bit of a honeymoon period. He's sort of a strategy guy, an infantryman, and not really connected to, let's say, the army deals and other aspects of the military, which tend to provoke the protesters. But the new president hasn't really captured the imagination of the general Algerian public or the protesting crowds. He has an opportunity to make good with the protesters. For example, he could release all the leaders that have been arrested in recent months or lift other controls on freedom of expression or freedom to protest. But so far, the gestures made by the new president have been fairly symbolic. For example, he's asking the population to call him Mr. President rather than Your Excellency, as if that was a major concession to the protesting crowds.
So what are their signs that should we be looking at?
Well, most of the analysis tends to point at the fact that we've had millions of Algerians in the street for 10 months, which is true, except that there have been ebbs and flows in the protesting, and the largest protests have occurred around national anniversaries or international events like International Women's Day, when you'll get those larger protests. So if you sort of want to take the temperature of what's going on, you look, let's say over the next 2-3 months at any sort of major national anniversaries. And if you're still getting a million people in the streets of the various cities, 2 million people, that means the protest movement still has a lot of legs. But if that starts to wane, if the crackdown seems to be working, if the protest crowds are smaller, then we're probably seeing the beginning of the end of this round of protests.
Do you think that there is a point, if this continues, that the regime might say enough and take stronger action?
Yeah, I think it's just a question of what concessions they're willing to make. So far, we've had Bouteflika's presidency end, and we've had arrests of a number of close allies to Bouteflika for corruption, but not all of the people that could have been arrested for corruption. And former intelligence chiefs and prime ministers and others. But it wasn't a systematic crackdown. It was more of a selective crackdown that looks to outsiders a little bit like certain parts of the regime settling scores with other parts of the regime. I think the one that's the most likely, if we have sustained protests, would be bringing back some of the ministers and government officials who presided over Algeria's first democratic opening in 89 to 91, figures like Hamroush and other ministers that work for him, who so far have been staying out of the political discussion, but could be returned if Algeria is going to take a second try at serious democratization.
And that was William Lawrence, Professor of Political Science at George Washington University, speaking there with VOA's Paul Alexander. Moving to Southeast Asia, a bus accident in Indonesia has left 28 people dead and more than a dozen injured. Authorities say the bus plunged into an 80-meter deep ravine on Sumatra Island just before midnight Monday, crashing into a fast-flowing river. Survivors say the driver lost control of the vehicle after its brakes malfunctioned on a winding road in South Sumatra province. The bus was headed for the provincial capital of Palembang from the neighboring city of Bengkulu. It's not clear how many people were on board. The driver and crew are among the dead. Rescue teams are searching for other passengers who might have been dragged away by the river. Search efforts were suspended as night fell, but are expected to resume on Wednesday. Road accidents are common in Indonesia because of poor infrastructure and safety standards. VOA's International Edition continues.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
You're listening to International Edition on Voice of America. I'm Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick. From a trade war to disagreements on Hong Kong and human rights, the ties between the United States and China were seriously tested in 2019. And despite the recent agreement on phase one of the trade pact that averts the imposition of further tariffs against each other, some analysts say Washington's issues with Beijing are more intractable. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching has the story.
Phase one of the deal means for now. The United States and China will not be imposing new tariffs on each other's products. It comes after months of back and forth between the world's two leading economies.
I think that what has happened over the last year has told us that the United States has more concerns about Chinese behavior and doubts about whether or not the United States can actually influence that behavior to shape China's policies going forward.
One such concern in 2019 was China's treatment of the ethnic Muslim Uyghur minority in Xinjiang. The U.S. has said China is committing very significant abuses against the Uyghurs and leaked Chinese internal documents confirm what some are calling a brutal repression.
These reports are consistent with an overwhelming and growing body of evidence that the Chinese Communist Party is committing human rights violations and abuses against individuals in mass detention.
In Hong Kong, residents sang the American National Anthem in late November to thank U.S. President Donald Trump after he signed into law two bipartisan bills that support pro-democracy movements in the former British colony. China vowed to retaliate.
In response to the unreasonable behavior of the U.S., the Chinese government has decided to suspend reviewing applications to visit Hong Kong by U.S. military ships and aircraft starting Monday.
Bonnie Glasser from CSIS said the clash over trade, Xinjiang and Hong Kong, is a reflection of deeper problems.
There's also concerns about China on a broader number of issues. We're not just looking at military, economic, and diplomatic problems. We're looking more broadly at things like Chinese political interference.
Others believe the tense relationship between Washington and Beijing is also a result of diverging value systems.
There are fundamental differences in values between the United States and China, fundamentally different conceptions over what constitutes human rights, what should be the relationship between government, between the governing and the governed. What should be the attitude towards religious minorities, ethnic minorities? So there are a number of crucial normative differences.
For the first time in recent years, the high-level U.S.-China talks on diplomatic and security issues that take place regularly in either Washington or Beijing did not happen this year. U.S. officials are skeptical on whether such U.S. engagement with China will really deliver results and change China's behavior. Maggie Ching, VOA News, State Department.
In South Sudan, the commissioner of Jebel Buma County in Buma State is calling on non-governmental organizations to rescue thousands of families on the verge of starvation. The commissioner, Longani Alston, says some families are surviving on leaves, while others are killing wild animals at a national park for food. The commissioner says if aid agencies continue to ignore calls for help, the situation will worsen. VOA's John Tanzer witnessed families surviving on leaves during a visit to Buma last week.
We have been isolated. Though when there are challenges, I use radio call to write messages as before. We have no network.
You use the long-range VHF radio?
Yes, we have radio long-range. This is what we are using now. And the satellite phone. Sometimes there is a challenge. I don't have unit to report to my state headquarters. When there's no unit, unless I use the radio range.
I mean, by units you mean airtime, when you don't have airtime on your trial.
Yeah, when I have no airtime, I can use the radio.
I see you sitting very quiet and smiling. What motivates you?
What motivated me, it is just to deliver the services to my community, telling them about how government wanted them to be, informing them about the issue of hunger. They must to go and farm, make farm among themselves, not to wait WFP to provide them food. They have to make their own food by themselves.
And how are people responding to that call for them to be self-sustainable? How are people responding to that?
In fact, they are responding positively, but due to the insecurity issue sometimes, it leads people to lose hope, not making agriculture. But when there is a peace for now, I think this year they will make their own food.
Talk about the issue of food. When we were going to the market today, I've not seen a lot of varieties. What is going on here?
Well, actually, we are in remote area now. You know, our food commodities are normally being brought from the site of Kapoita. And you know there is a heavy rain this year, of which there is no accessibility of the road. That is why you are seeing shops are no goods anymore, because they have got finished.
And what is going to happen? There's no food in the stores. There's nothing there. What is going to happen? How will people survive?
That will be a very critical. So I don't know. Unless the other time I raised this issue to the state, so that the humanitarian has to really intervene about the hunger for Jebel Buma County, since the roads have become closed and there is no any food items again in the shops. So I raise it, but I'm still going to wait. What is the response? There's no response.
And if you are to speak to humanitarian aid agencies today, how many people are at risk of starvation here? Because this is a serious situation. I've seen it with my own eyes. How many people are at risk of starvation?
You know, the whole of Jebel Buma County, all of them, they are 58,000. All these 58,000 are suffering, you know. In fact, some of the people went to Ethiopia during 2013 clashes, and some of them now came. So those who are now present in Jebel Buma County, in various places, they are facing this hunger. So almost 12,000 people are suffering.
And if you are to speak again to the aid agencies, what would you tell them?
I will tell them to really to intervene this situation, because we are in a risky situation now. They have to provide us maybe with food. Now there is a problem of hunger in Jebel Buma County, and even there is a problem of sicknesses. You find there is serious sicknesses like malaria, and even now there is measles, of which almost 200 children are dying due to this sickness. There is no medicine.
Longani Alston there, Commissioner of Buma County, speaking with VOA's John Tanzer. For the first time since 1803, the iconic Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris will not be holding Christmas Mass. A fire nearly destroyed the iconic UNESCO World Heritage Site, and engineers are still assessing whether it can be saved. The fire destroyed the Gothic spire, the roof, and many irreplaceable artifacts in one of France's most famous landmarks. International Editions' Laurie London talks about the loss of the traditional Mass with reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
It's a very, very sad day. I think suddenly Paris is realizing that Notre Dame is out of action and she'll be out of action for a long time. There was this idea that perhaps somehow there would be a mass, perhaps a Christmas mass, but there's nothing. What we're seeing now is 8 months after that fire, the structure is still too unstable for anyone to go in. There's a risk of lead poisoning, and all that they can do is say, look, we will let you know by the middle of 2020 whether we can save this cathedral. That's all they're working on at the moment, is just going through that cathedral stone by stone to see how much damage has been done and whether or not it can be saved.
This building, of course, has remained open for Christmas through, what is it, two centuries of history where there was a lot of turmoil, including the Nazi occupation in the Second World War.
Indeed, two world wars, and it still stayed open. Notre Dame was, it's more than just a cathedral. It's the place where the nation comes together. It's a place where the nation celebrates. It's where the nation picks itself up. It's a place where the nation looks after one another, heals one another. So the idea that it made it through two world wars, it made it through the Franco-Prussian War, and it was really just that 1 year in 1803, during a very turbulent anti-Catholic period that followed the French Revolution, that's the only time that it's been closed. So even though they've managed to put the floodlights outside so you can see it lit up at night, it's a very sad building in lots of ways because it's not open. All the stained glass windows have been removed. They've been taken somewhere else to be restored. People are being kept way back. You can't get within 100 meters of the building. And this is a reminder that the heart of Paris is still there, but no one can go near it.
Do they plan to still hold the Midnight Mass somewhere else?
There will be a Midnight Mass nearby. There are many churches nearby Notre Dame. That central part of Paris has got a lot of churches, but in fact it will just be another parish church nearby that the parishioners of Notre Dame in lots of ways say that they feel as though they're always going from church to church. Whichever church will have them in the area, that's where they're going.
And that was journalist Catherine Field in Paris speaking with VOA's Laurie London. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And please tune in tomorrow for a special program looking at some of the major issues around the world in 2019. Thank you to our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer, Nashwan Kali. I'm Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington, wishing you a great day.